I never asked afterwards, and I it was never mentioned.
So do you have any art stores or anything that you saw standing in the first place that did you remember stand out in the meeting? Because you did come in the morning times to see your father.
I'm sorry. There was the on the Saturday morning, Baba had, you know, in the instructions it was said that no one would have personal interviews and that no one should ask and all that sort of thing. But then on when we got there, I don't know which day it was, but we were told that Baba would see the individual groups just for a short time on the Saturday morning. It would have been the third, I suppose. Yeah. And when our group was called, and I think it was probably only 10, 15 minutes or something. I don't really remember.
Because I think some of the other days, also in the mornings, that you all used to go to the hospital. Before the, in the afternoons, it's probably not
shown. Yes.
Like on the first.
Yeah.
Second,
but we used to be there. We used to get into the bus at the hotel and arrive at Guru Prasad and go straight into the big hall with Baba. As far as I know, unless people were called very early. It was originally started. It was originally to have started at 9 o'clock, and then it became 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
So we were there earlier each morning.
So do you remember any rock climbing?
Oh well, I think that's all on film and
yeah.
Every
well, any
yeah.
Personal impressions
Not,
that you stand out.
Well, again, David, my most strong personal feelings are without words. I just can't. Words aren't necessary, you know. It's just that those feelings that I had which were just so incredibly beautiful.
Do you remember meeting Baba for the first time?
Yes, that was on the night that I met Baba. After the people who were introduced, the women were introduced to Baba, then he sent the men out and called Mara and the women in. And each of us then met each of the women Mandali. We moved in two lines. The women Mandali came down one direction and we went that direction. And as we progressed, then the one opposite, you'd greet the one, whichever the Mandali, one of the women Mandali it was, they greeted us first, really. And then names were given and then we just gradually move on. But that was only very, very short, just enough time to do that, probably 5-10 minutes or something.
You must have gotten stuck in that bank world.
Oh, yes. Yes, but I wasn't one of those who was given clothing and things.
Yeah.
I guess I just dried out by myself or something. I remember going into the rooms where the women were, but there were so many other people there and women who'd known the Mandali before. And naturally they were on, much more easy terms, if I can put it that way. I mean, they would talk to them and it was all so new to me and so overwhelming. I don't remember speaking to anyone in particular at that time. In fact, one of my strongest feelings after that was all over and we were on the ship going back was that I just felt I'd been hit with a hammer or something. I don't quite know what the expression would be, but...
Out of focus.
Maybe.
In another world.
Yeah. If the whole thing was just so overwhelming for me, because I'd known nothing of Baba at all when he came in 56 and 58 to Australia. I'd never even heard anything about that. And it was only when I met Bill in 61 and heard from him, that was my first hearing of him, even. And then to go a year later, to actually meet him, well, it just was just so overwhelming. Just 4.5 days to just be there with him. And even though, as I said, there were no personal interviews or anything like that, it was... didn't matter. He must have been with each one individually anyway, I guess.
Mm.
He just embraced us all, both literally and during the time that we were there. It's just being with him. And really, I think that's all I can say, because it's in all the years since that I've come to know more about him and well, my whole life's just with him, that's all.
Did you know a woman in
Judah Humphrey? Oh yes, she came with us, and she was very ill. Well, no, I didn't know that at the time. I only heard it later, and then she died not long after we got back.
Do you know anything about her story?
No, I don't. No, because I'd met her. In fact, I'm not even sure that I didn't meet her just before we left on the ship. Mm-hmm. I was working full time, and whatever other time that I was working with Bill on arrangements and everything was just so flat out that I didn't really meet people before I went on board. And I'm sure I met some of them when I was on the way.
And there's some mention of a girl who came to India from Australia, and her name is spelled like this, but I've never heard of Jane Melkin or Moulton.
No, doesn't mean a thing. Sorry.
I'm not sure when she met Baba, but she was traveling and went to Baba Center.
No, nothing about her. Nothing at all. No. Well, is it still on? No, I really haven't.
Minutes.
I really haven't, David. I'm not a person who.
I'm surprised.
Who talks out like that? You know, I'm just not. I can't.
Surprised to have it got hold of you, just in advertising and give weekly talks.
Oh no, no, no. Why?
Because it's not that into it that bothers.
No, I suppose I'm always. They're just used to me being around, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
She gets more practice before you come.
But I'm not naturally a talker. I'm naturally a person who works way back.
Yeah.
And, I mean, my work all these years has been to help Bill and in his work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one. Well, I didn't have the time with Barbara anyway. I mean, no personal, I mean, like people in 56, 58 who had so much more personal contact with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's just different. I'm in between the people who were there when he was there in 56, 58, mostly an older group, and then I came along and nothing happened for a long time until 67, then all the young ones came. So I'm in the middle of that group. And as I say, in you know, like working in the background, as it were, I'm not even very good at talking to people when they come, you know, like for anniversary or whatever. I've always been a very reserved. I'm not an extrovert by any means. I don't know. He hadn't anything definite before I left, but he could.
In 1954, here with Baba, one of his great messages was, age after age, the avatar comes amidst mankind to maintain his own creation of illusion, thereby also awakening humanity to awareness of it. The framework of illusion is always one and the same, but the designs in illusion are innumerable and ever-changing. My advent is not to destroy illusion, as it is absolutely nothing. I come to make you become aware of the nothingness of illusion. Through you, I automatically maintain illusion which is nothing but the shadow of my infinite self. And through me, you automatically discard illusion when you experience its falseness. Come together, he said, in order to fulfill my will by taking your stand upon truth and honesty and be worthy of participating in my task. I give you all my message of love. Baba explained, the avatar is not necessarily recognized and hailed as the avatar by each and all, because he covers himself under a veil for his own spiritual work. This veil, under which he prefers to remain hidden, is different from the veil which the five perfect form. The veil which is by him at any time and for any person or persons as he may desire for the purpose of self-revelation or self-communication. The avatar does not take upon himself the karma of the world, nor does he become bound by it, but he takes upon himself the suffering of the world, which is the result of its karma. His suffering for the world is vicarious. It does not entail entanglement with the karma of the world, but humanity finds its redemption from its karma through his vicarious sufferings, such as illness, humiliation, accidents, and the like. In his own ways, the avatar unfailingly fulfills his incarnation by giving a spiritual push to his age. And as you all know, this incarnation of the avatar has revealed to us that he is capable of and does come to each individual at his or her own level and in her own space, whatever and wherever it is. He adapts himself to whatever background, concepts, limitations, shyness, whatever, to the individual. There would probably be thousands and thousands of very poignant and wonderful stories of the way that he has guided individuals, even through this incarnation, which is a very great one, because of his presence. In my own case, I can say, quite honestly, that unknown to me through my early years, I must have been under an umbrella of protection, of grace, and inner guidance that inevitably led me to him. He saw fit to have me incarnate in the West. That's where he wanted me to work. And to be exposed to his revelation as Jesus the Christ. And this came very naturally to me, and it was the most natural thing to accept him as the Christ through Jesus, to feel his presence. To feel the presence of God the Father and the guidance of the Holy Spirit. I didn't know anything about world religions early in my life. Later on, I did study them all and so on. But in my early life, I could not be reconciled to joining any church. I went to Sunday school because there was one nearby. My folks while not overly religious, were spiritually inclined enough to want us to have some training. So we were sent to a Lutheran Sunday school, which was very valuable, and I learned a great deal about the Judeo-Christian thought and revelation. And but as I grew old enough to join a church, I thought more and more that how could he be limited to these doctrines and creeds and dogmas that are a prerequisite to joining any specific church? And I said, I can't do that. He must be bigger than that. He's all-inclusive. I could not even be satisfied with anyone's interpretation of what Jesus said, so I went back to the New and the Old so-called Testaments myself, and they seemed open and clear and very, very beautiful. Even in my days of adventure, wandering, and even working on ranches all over the American West and all of that, having rough and tumble experiences, I was also having inner experiences with him. And it seemed natural and normal for me. I supposed that most people were having experiences like that. But as time went on, my life became more contemplative, and my seeking, though not overt, it was an inner reaching toward him. And I came to feel some little measure of the significance of this age in which we live. I'm talking 1920s, and it was in those years that I felt more and more strongly that he would come again. I thought in terms of the second coming of Christ. Had I been born in India, I might have thought in terms of Krishna or, you know, one of Ram, one of the others, by name. Equally valid. But this was the way he had chalked out for me. So I thought in terms of the second coming of Christ. And I felt more and more convinced that this would happen in my lifetime and soon, and that I would know about it, and that wherever he was in the world, that somehow I would get to him. I knew that I would come to him. So along about 1930, I began to feel that this would happen in 1932, at least for me. And so it was in the year of 1932 that I saw this small item in our local newspaper, copied from one of the New York syndicated papers, in which it told of a person named Sri Meher Baba and a small group of disciples leaving Bombay. I mean, they were going to London and after a few days proceed on to New York. And it spoke of him being silent and that he was regarded by his followers as a Messiah and all of that. There were no pictures. This was the only thing I saw, but right away, I was electrified when I saw that in the paper. I felt perfectly right about him. It just rang a bell loud and clear. And I said, you know, could it really be? It really sounds like the real thing. It must be him. There were no addresses given, so there was no place to write to or to go to. Just continue to watch the papers, and sure enough, toward the last of May, the 23rd or so of May, another item appeared in the paper stating that Sri Meher Baba and his disciples had arrived in America and would be at a retreat at Harmon on Hudson, which is about 40 miles north of New York City, for about a week. And then he would go on to California and break his silence. Well, that very morning when I read this first, the second item, my heart was reaching out to him, reaching into him, and he came to me in the spirit. I was caught up in the spirit and was intensely aware of his presence, though not psychic, not clairvoyant. I was simply aware of his presence and being in the spirit with him, which is out of time and place. And it was not an initial meeting. It was a joyous, blissfully joyous reunion with that beloved I had known right along, but always thought of in terms of Galilee and long ago. So my joy was unbounded, knowing that he had come to me, that he was really there. And I felt that I should drop everything and leave my job and go to this retreat at Harmonon Hudson, try to find it, which was about 150 miles south of where we live. And I tried to find him. It was as though I were resisting the pull of wild horses. But somehow I allowed my reasoning mind to overrule my heart, my intuition, because my mind said, well, you know, in the newspaper it said he'll be there a whole week, and so there's plenty of time left. And within a couple of days it would be the Memorial Day weekend, which means that we would have a three-day holiday. I'd have time off from work. And although there was some undercurrent of feeling disturbed about my decision, still I listened to my reason. So in 2 or 3 days, another young fellow and I hopped into my car, left Jean and our first child, very young baby, and went in search of Mahabal. It was easy to find Harmon on Hudson, of course, but then we began to inquire, and I suppose it's quite unusual, it was at that time, for anyone from the East, with fanfare of newspaper publicity and all that, very unusual, and of course it wasn't hard to find someone who could easily tell where this retreat was. So we soon found it. But Mayor Bob had finished his work early and gone on to California. I had not missed him. I had simply missed his physical body. I had found him. His presence, of course, was very intensely there, his love, and the presence you all know so well. The setting of the retreat is beautiful. It's along the Croton River. It's idyllic, but it has special enchantment because of his presence there, you know. There were a few people there, including Josephine Ross, Milo Shantok, you may have read of him. He was the link between Meredith Starr in England and the Schlosses in New York, and preparing for Baba to come to America. Anita DiCaro, known to you as Madame Anita Villard, now who lives in Paris, but she was very young then, and a few others. And We of course, were very young, too, this young fellow and I, and we fell in with the group very readily, and they told us a great deal about Baba and his presence there. And Josephine, who was somewhat of a poet and has had books of beautiful poetry published, let me read one of her impressions of Baba's presence there, which is this, and it was written to Baba. Like the flame burning upon the altars of 1,000,000 hearts you came, and from every altar rose sweet clouds of incense. Wherever you went, you took light with you, and people's lives blossomed into new beauty. At last we knew what love was. At last we understood why Jesus had such power over men's hearts. Looking at you, we saw Jesus, and loving him, we loved you the more. love and joy and beauty, peace and light and life, these we found incarnate in you, and our faith was turned into certainty. Hitherto we had believed in God, now we knew that he existed, for we found him in you. Life became a succession of days of flaming glory and radiant beauty, and you were that glory and that beauty. Every moment was filled with divine joy, and you were that joy. Our hearts burned with a love we could hardly understand, and you were that love. You were the center of the universe, the sun towards which we turned as naturally as do the flowers in summer, and you warmed us and fed our starving souls with pure beauty that was the essence of your being. We found sanctuary in your arms and in your presence, holiness. The same Josephine Ross, seeing how strongly I felt about Baba, I suppose Baba inspired her to ask me if I would like to write a letter to him. And I jumped at the chance and said, yes, I would. So she provided me with paper and pen and envelope and so on. And I just poured out my heart to Baba, offering my life, my services in his cause. And I had come for that reason. And many other things. And so I sealed the letter and we put a stamp on it. And we drove over to the nearby post office about 2 miles away and dropped the letter in the mail slot of the door. It was a weekend and the post office was closed. Then we drove back to the retreat and sat down to the evening meal. And partway through the evening meal, Baba began to reply to my letter, welling through the heart center with his unmistakable love, answering every item of my letter. I could understand and feel his answers. Yes, I do accept you. Yes, I love you. And you may serve my cause. Just everything was coming through. I'd never had an experience with him like this. And of course, tears began to fall. Everyone there seemed to understand what was taking place. And this was, you might say, the beginning of my conscious relationship with him in this lifetime. The actual physical meeting didn't happen until 1934. Meantime, we began going to New York. We met Marina, Elizabeth, John Bass, and others. And also went to the home of the Stokes in Greenwich Village, a place where Baba had stayed in 1931, November, when he was there, and he had visited in the spring of 1932, just shortly before I first went to Harmon. And the Stokes have a little room which Graham had reserved for excuse me, meditation. And it was filled with pictures of masters, saints, and a lovely picture of Baba there, and a chair where Baba had sat. And we went there and just sat a while for meditation. And Jean went in this room, and it was there that Baba came to her, where she first realized, you know, that it was Baba. At the time, she didn't realize that. But after hearing me talk about Baba coming to me in the spirit so much, she said, well, wait a minute. Baba came to me in the spirit, too, as he did. And she became, so how many of you has he come to? Perhaps everyone, many times, I'm sure of it. Anyway, so it wasn't just something for me. But as time went on, much to our joy, the greatest thing was going to happen again. He was coming to America again in December of 1934. So we didn't have to wait so very long. And we were poor at the time, but we had saved a huge sum of $20. And I had no car, but my father had one, in which I borrowed this. And it had no heater in it. Of course, November or December is cold in New York State. And Jim was expecting our second child. Renee. Third child? 34. Anyway, she was expecting. she was expecting. And, but we were young, and, you know, it was, for the young, nothing is an obstacle. Nothing at all. So, with joyous abandon, we were ready to go off to New York City, to see Mayor Baba at last.
No place to stay.
No place to stay. But we had $20, after all. And, but we got up at 4 o'clock in the morning of our appointment. Lorena Machiavelli had been keeping in touch with us, and she had cabled us from the ship on which they were sailing, Baba and the party, with him. And as we were about to leave the house, we found a cable hanging on the outside of our door. We opened it up and said, apologetically, that due to storms at sea, that Baba and party would be arriving late, and our appointment had been canceled. So we, but we would be able to see Baba at a reception the following day. But with the background of having missed Baba physically in 1932, I looked at Jean, and Jean looked at me, and then as I tore up the cable, put it aside, we walked out and got in the car and started out for New York City. And we had no idea of imposing ourselves upon him or being obtrusive in any way, but we thought, at least maybe we will see him walk by, you know. He has to walk through the lobby of the hotel, and so if we get there, maybe we'll have a chance to see him at least today. But at least we won't miss him for the following day, you know, in case he decides to go on after one day or something. We didn't want to miss him again. So off we went, and we arrived at the Shelton Hotel on Lexington Avenue in New York City before Baba did. So if that ship did not sink, we were sure to see him. So we were there, and before long, Norina came walking in through the door, and she spotted us and walked over to us, and we greeted each other. And she said, "But my dears, didn't you get my cable?" And we said, "Yes, yes, but we're not going to impose ourselves or anything. We just thought maybe we'd see Baba as he goes by." And she saw that we had our hearts on our sleeves. And she said, "Well, he's coming in the taxi following me, and he'll be here instantly, and maybe he will greet you at least." And sure enough, just then Baba and Chanji came in through the door, and Baba was dressed in a long, ill-fitting, borrowed Western overcoat, and a soft hat with his hair pushed up and the hat pulled way down, and, you know. And then Norina walked over to him quickly and spoke to him, and he looked over at us and nodded, and then she walked with him over to us. This was our first glimpse into those infinite pools of divine love that were his eyes. And our first exposure to the radiance. The incomprehensible, the immeasurable, the enveloping, the permeating ocean of love. He was the one. Was indeed the one. There wasn't an embrace at first, but the look in his eyes and the hand clasp, which I always felt might have reached down through some perhaps 2,000 years, and I had been waiting for that, perhaps all that time. I know I was overjoyed. I must have taken off like a rocket. Inwardly, because he really was the one. There was no question about it. his beauty, the sweetness of his love, which I could not cloak in words, the joy, the sparkling wonder of his being, you know. One could not prefigure him. One could never imagine how it would be like, how he was like. You could not do that. He was more than one could imagine, much more, immeasurably more. Of course, he also had a little time with Jean there and looked into her eyes, took her hand. Jean perhaps was not quite as well prepared to receive him as I was. And she was a little taken aback by the fact that he looked so strange in those borrowed winter Western clothes. And it was disconcerting to her. But still she began to wonder more deeply about him. And Narina then whisked Baba away from us toward the elevator, and Jean and I slowly began walking toward chairs in the lobby of the hotel, thinking to sit down. But James irresistibly impelled to sneak a look at Baba, and she slowly turned around to catch a glimpse. And at exactly the same time that she was turning around, Baba was also turning around, and their eyes met in Baba bowed to her. She quickly turned away. She had been caught in trying to catch a glimpse of him. But in spite of herself, again, she could not resist trying to steal another look. And Baba, exactly the same way, turned around and again smilingly bowed to her. That happened 3 times. And who knows what Baba gave Jean during those 3 eye-to-eye encounters like that. I don't know. But it certainly prepared her for what happened later in the day. Actually, we were very happy. More than happy to have had this brief encounter with the beloved. There's nothing that can compare with it. But when we got over to some soft, comfortable seats in the lobby, we found a little elderly lady there whose appointment for the day had also been canceled. But she had baked Baba a cake, and she just felt that somehow she was going to see Baba that day. And she just wanted to stay there, and hoping to see him. We had plenty to think about and to try to assimilate in some little way, so it was very nice for us to just sit there. And we saw people coming in, going to the desk and getting directions to go to Baba's suite of rooms, people whose appointments had not been canceled. And although we were envious, but we felt we had received, he'd given us a great deal, and we didn't want to expect anything more that day. But after about 2 hours, Elizabeth Patterson emerged from the elevator and walked over to us and said, "Well, I guess you 3 people must be the ones that Baba wants to come up to his suite of rooms." So, wow, you know. And so later on, we went with her to the elevator, of course, and up to those rooms. And later on, she explained that in the midst of all these people coming for their interviews, Baba had motioned to her, held up his hands. "Hold everything. Hold up the interview." "Yes, Baba," he said. Then he said, "3 people downstairs. 3 people downstairs. Go down and bring them up. Bring them up here." So he knew we were waiting there. Oh, you see. And this time, when we got to Baba's suite of rooms, we shed our winter clothes, and there's like a living room, and off the living room was a bedroom. And Baba was in the bedroom with Narina and Chandi, and Baba was sitting on the far side of the bed, and the window letting light through. And of course, Baba was dressed in his beautiful white sadra, and his long, beautiful, long, flowing hair was there, and his big mustache, and he was indescribably beautiful. I had the impression of two opposites, that he was like a wraith who might float away at any instant, but also like a tower of strength, immeasurably powerful. Jean always says that she has no recollection at all of how she managed to go from the doorway out around the bed and over to Baba's side. Doesn't have any remembrance of that at all. But when she got over there, Bob had her sit right beside him on the left, and I sat on her left, and this little elderly lady sat on Baba's right. Well, this close proximity to Baba was just too much for this little lady, and she just threw her arms around Baba, I imagine, and exclaimed, "Oh, my master, at last I found you." And she was just beside herself with exuberance and joy. And she could not contain herself. We also felt that way. Jean, in the midst of this, suddenly started to weep. And it began to get more uncontrollable all the time. And so she was actually sobbing. She couldn't control this weeping, this sobbing. And she thought to herself, "Oh, gosh, here, I'm not able to really appreciate this precious time with Baba because of this weeping." And Baba instantly disengaged himself from this other lady and just reached over and put his hand on Jean's wrist. And she became very calm and quiet, relaxed, and completely at ease with Baba. And from then on was, of course, able to really be there to fully appreciate and absorb, you know, at least some measure of this wonderful love that Baba was pouring upon us. And then he just looked across past her and into my eyes. And on this occasion, he was looking deep. I was very conscious of what he was doing. He was like in some old warehouse, moving old furniture and junk aside and looking all the way back through, I don't know, to the very beginning, but examining the whole thing, and I suppose rearranging, but also planting seeds. I was conscious of the content of these seeds. They were things that I would be doing later on in life, many years later. Already he was planting these seeds. And there was no hypnosis, nothing of that sort. On the contrary, the beginning of awakening, of consciousness at deeper levels than one had ever experienced it before, the clearing away of debris, of course, as I mentioned. Who knows the mystery of the penetrating glance of the Divine Beloved? Who knows what it means and what he does? How far-reaching? I don't. then there were a few moments of relaxation, and Baba was using the board at the time. And, of course, we came to Baba as one comes to Christ. We were not philosophers or seekers who had intellectual questions, nothing of that sort. We came because he was the Christ, to offer ourselves at his feet, to love him, to surrender to him. And he said he was so happy. Can you imagine how happy we were? He said there was no need for words. Of course, already he had taken us far past where words would go or their meanings. There was immeasurable communication between us. Actually, it was he who was communicating. And we were the immeasurably fortunate recipients. It was not heavy. It was light and beautiful and joyous. And there was never any feeling of coming before the judge or of any kind of measuring us or anything of the sort for what we were or were not. We felt that we were different kind of beings in his presence. Somehow he took us out of ourselves. and we were relaxed in his love. We didn't understand. It was beyond our understanding. It took me years to be able to even to be a little bit articulate about it at all. So in the midst of all of this, Baba looked at Narina, who was standing nearby, and he said, make an appointment for them to come see me the day after tomorrow. And Narina said, but Baba, there is no room. And Baba said, never mind, make room. We didn't even know he was going to be there that day.